For the new American Airlines, will it be Boeing or Airbus?
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Wednesday, the 27th of March. And today, a federal bankruptcy judge is holding a hearing on the proposed American Airlines-U.S. Airways merger. It is one of the final steps for the merger plan, and two other companies will be watching very closely because they've got a lot of airplanes to sell. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
When a couple gets together, there can be tussles over favorite brands. I like one kind of peanut butter, my husband likes another. The American-U.S. Airways merger is kind of like that on steroids. American has traditionally bought Boeing planes. U.S. Airways prefers Airbus. Seth Kaplan is with Airline Weekly. He says there won't be fights over brands in this airline marriage, at least initially.
It's like two people who already have their own place to live, and they're sort of putting it all together into one, and they might not need as much together as they did separately.
American Airlines already ordered a boatload of new planes before the merger talks. U.S. Airways could have said, honey, we have to buy my brand, but it didn't. Maybe because American actually split the order between Boeing and Airbus. Airline analyst Daryl Jenkins says that's because Boeing and Airbus had to finance the deals.
They kind of split it up to reduce the risk on both sides. So I think everybody made out very well on this one.
But the winner of the first deal the merged airlines do as a couple is anybody's guess. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge is going all electronic today. For the first time in 76 years, the iconic bridge will be without a human toll taker. Marketplace's Queena Kim reports.
The most obvious reason for going all electronic is to save money. In the case of the Golden Gate Bridge, they're saying the move will save $16 million in 8 years. That's mostly in salary and benefits. Of course, there's a human toll. 9 people lost their jobs. Another 17 are being placed elsewhere or are retiring. But Patrick Jones, the executive director of the International Bridge, Tunnel, and Turnpike Association, says San Francisco is following a nationwide trend.
You see it happen on the Tobin Bridge in Boston. You've seen entire systems switching to all electronic tolling in Denver, Colorado, Dallas, Texas, Austin, Texas.
Christopher Zegras is a professor of transportation and urban planning at MIT. And he says the big picture isn't about saving money, but finding more ways to fund our decaying highways.
I predict within the next 10 years, we will have a system that's much less based on the gas tax, much more based on we pay for what we use.
And Zegras says electronic toll technology will pave the way to that future. In San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Tomorrow, we'll find out how many people applied for unemployment benefits last week. That number has been trending downward as the economy has improved around the country. But the job market isn't getting better everywhere. In Rhode Island, the unemployment rate remains at 9.8%, tied with California for the highest in the nation. Leonard Lardero is an economics professor at the University of Rhode Island, and he's with us now from Providence to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so what is the matter with Rhode Island's economy?
We're not really a place where there's a friendly business environment. Any 50-state comparison really pummels us very, very badly. We don't really have the quality of K-12 education we need. And so these things are all curable. But the saddest thing was in 2008, at the end of the year, when the global and national economies were spinning, Rhode Island had the perfect opportunity, like other states, to reinvent itself, to build on our strengths, to get rid of our weaknesses. We did nothing.
Why is Rhode Island's economy so different from neighboring Massachusetts?
The biggest answer there has to be technology. That Massachusetts, they've had hardships over the years, and they had to reinvent themselves when the mini computers died, other things had happened. And so they really went after their cost structure. They always had excellent human capital. But Rhode Island hasn't gone after its tax and cost structure. Sadly, our leaders seem to have this management culture of denial that you should always look at the glass as being half full. So don't be negative, even if you're being accurate. So people like me will say, this is a problem. We've been losing population, for example, since July of 2004. So hopefully we'll decide we can use our size, be nimble. We'll really go after things. Because our biggest problem right now has to be the lack of skills of our labor force. And that's another reason why things are so problematic here, why we're stuck in such a bad place.
But you've got a lot of universities. I mean, there's Brown, there's the University of Rhode Island, there are others. Why can't you keep any of those students? Yeah.
Well, it's a combination of things. Because we don't have the prerequisites for success in a tech era, we actually produce a lot of very skilled people. But because our tax and cost structure isn't good enough and we haven't managed the state efficiently, we effectively lease them out to Massachusetts and Connecticut. We've redefined brain drain as kind of 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. But the irony of that is when they come home with that money, it fuels retail sales, it fuels housing and some other areas. So it becomes very uneven economic activity. And that's what we've got to break out of. We need consistency and we need leadership that knows how to deal with an information-based economy.
Leonard Lardero is a professor of economics at the University of Rhode Island. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And finally, chewing gum may indeed help you think. A study published in the British Journal of Psychology had two groups of people listen to a sequence of numbers. One group chewed gum while they listened, the other did not. And the gum chewers, it turns out, had faster reaction times and higher accuracy rates afterwards than the non-chewers. The effect of blowing bubbles apparently did not figure into this study, so we still don't know whether that helps you think even more. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.